Lovers, I want you to play with me. I also would love to know who you would like to see me play with. If there is an LA-based adult creator you'd love to see me collaborate with during my 52 days of play, please let me and or them know. From April 30th to June 21st, I am doing solo, partnered, in-person, and virtual explorations and co-creations every day, and I would love it if you joined me. Details are all on my website at yole.com/52. That's yole.com/52. Hello, lovely humans. I'm Wyo Lee, and you are listening to X Stories, formerly Sex Stories, a podcast where we learn about what makes connection pleasureful for different people in an effort to make the world a sexier, more loving place. And our guest today is a 35-year-old kitchen table polyamorous straight-ish Indian-American person who has multiple partners. He loves creating healing experiences through touch, inviting fun and play into intimate connections, and spreading a wholesome sense of sluttiness in and outside of their artistic community. They work as a sexual surrogate partner therapist and sex educator with us today from Washington, D.C. Welcome, Chet.
Hey, how are you? You have such a telephone voice.
Oh, well, I practiced my breathing, and in fact, I am trained as an actor, film school and actor trained. And yes, I do get squeaky when I get excited or regular, and I do talk like a little kid a lot, which you maybe heard before we started, but thank you. Okay, so Chet, could you please start off by rating yourself on sexual shame-o-meter, with 10 being so full of shame and 1 or 0 being like, what shame? I don't have any shame. Where do you fall today? When, if ever, does it fluctuate?
What I would say is probably like 0.5, 0.25. Like, I don't want to, I don't believe in using extreme numbers. So but I am known as the shameless friend. It's a fortuitous thing because my work centers around destroying shame.
I love it.
I would say that over time, it's slowly trended towards even more shameless, but I've naturally been very fortunate that I, from a very, very young age, have had little to no shame and have been relatively shameless as a person, which also gets me into plenty of trouble.
Relatable. How does it get you in trouble? Because I accidentally will explode people with questions that I don't realize are like exploding a shame landmine. But I'd be curious to hear how it gets you in trouble. Or do you mean like naughty things?
The concept of TMI does not exist. Or when you're like, oh, here's my open chair. Or when it's like, I mean, shame in a non-sexual context, like just I'm the person who will go up and ask the question that everyone would like to ask, but everyone's like, oh, well, that's impolite. Or, oh, like, I'm going to look like an idiot asking that. And I'm like, I don't care about looking like an idiot. And I don't care if someone thinks it's maybe a little bit much where they're like, oh, like, I don't want to ask for something that's going to make me look like selfish, or I'm not going to ask you to like, hey, like you parked in this spot kind of weird, like any way you could like move up. Like, I'm like, no, like I'm going to get out of my car and be like, do you mind moving up? You know, instead of like being like all overly polite and Western about it.
Were you always like this?
Well, my dad, who I have worked my entire life to not be like, and for the most part have been relatively successful at, he's a man of negative shame. And so I have historically hated connecting the ways that him and I are similar, but I think, you know, I probably got that from him, but I've always been very, very low on the amount of shame that I felt in general, but especially around sex. It was just a very natural place for me. And it's only trended towards more and more self-acceptance or less and less shame. But, you know, there are moments that I experience some amount, but it's not like deeply held shame, fortunately.
Hmm. Okay, I would love to hear. It sounds like you have a wealth of knowledge when it comes to sex. It also sounds like you are a person, and I hope you tell us more about your work, who is used to holding space for others in sexual realms. So I would love to hear, how did you learn about sex?
Probably the same way that most young boys learn about sex, which is pornography. This idea is a very important one to me because as a surrogate partner therapist, I specialize in working with sex workers, especially because I believe, especially people who are making content, that they're teaching the next generation of young men a lot about what they learn about sex. And so if our sex workers can have a better relationship with their bodies, with their intimacy and with their sexuality, then these young men are going to learn how to treat people in a much more kind, loving, and delightful way. And, you know, you'll have less Andrew Tate in the world.
What in your ideal world does a better relationship with a sex worker and their body, how does that translate into on-screen content? Like, what would your ideal eduporn look like, or however you think of it?
I would love to see a world where, because more people who do different kinds of sex work are more comfortable with their bodies, that we see a greater diversity of people who are out there and expressing themselves, who are featured and shared and seen for their body, regardless of what kind of pubic hair they have and what color their skin is and what their body shape is and how old they are, and as long as they're consenting, and all of the various varieties of body configurations and shape sizes and diversity and gender as well. I would love to see a world where more people feel empowered to, you know, step into their sexy, to make content that they feel beautiful in. And then for the young people watching that, learning to say, hey, that person looks like they're having a great time. I like that. And that person might not be the same person that you normally would see on the cover of Vogue.
Yeah. Okay, so you started learning about sex through porn. What do you remember unfolding next in your own education?
So I remember getting into porn, having my first sex dream. In that dream, it was me in a group situation with all of the people that I was like kind of into at the time that I thought were cute in school, and in like a fun, like everyone loving on everyone group sex situation. And as I like further developed, and then like, you know, that was like in the fourth grade, and then like there was like a year there where I kind of like somehow had forgotten about porn. But then, you know, back in middle school, I, as many people generalize about a 12-year-old boy, like was masturbating a lot and watching a lot of porn and scrolling around seeing what's there. Except at the time, you know, it was like, oh, I'm gonna download this on like Kazaa, and I'm gonna hope that it's not a virus, and it's gonna like be hidden on a floppy disk that I hide behind a clock, like somewhere in my room, you know. Yeah, so that interest in group dynamics was pretty early from some of my earliest fantasies. And then watching more pornography, I generally like found that most of the things that really spoke to me had to do with rebellion. And rebellion against shame that today I can identify as societally imposed shame. You know, things like public sex and exhibitionism is obviously a push against shame. Group sex, in my mind, is a push against shame, because when something is happening between two people, it is a private matter. When there are three people or more in a situation, it loses its aspect of being a private affair.
It's a bigger private matter.
It's a bigger private matter, and sure. But, you know, the reality of it is that in a group situation of three or more people, you are embracing the reality that you are attracted to a multiplicity of people, and you can have care, feelings, attraction towards multiple people. And so since that breaks society's, you know, monogamous 1-1 mold, you know, it really, I think it's a big F you to shame around that. It's a big recognition of like owning your sexuality, because there's a large proportion of people that, you know, you look at it and you're like, oh, I wonder what they're like in bed, you know, or like, oh, I, you
oh,
know,
yes,
like,
I do. And everywhere I go, I wonder.
Everywhere I go. And it's like, it's so honest to then step into that group scenario where you're like openly owning that. owning that it's not just built upon, some societal constructs around, like, either it's like, oh, this is like the only expression of love, or oh, this is like strictly for procreation, or what, depending on whatever your background is, or however, what society you come from. But like, it's a big F you to all that. And so a lot of the sexuality that I experienced had to do with that. In fact, I noticed it recently when Roe v. Wade was overturned, and I was like, oh, you're going to tell me that, like, now, because you're going to make it like really difficult for people to like have intercourse where there's pregnancy risk? Oh, breeding kink, hello, and like, I continue to see that evolution as I see, hey, this is like what is expected of me or expected of people around me. My natural inclination sexually is, to push back. And so I continued to see that through high school, where many of my earliest sexual situations were group situations.
Oh, really? Okay. So when, oh, with, okay. Yeah. Tell us about whatever formative experiences feel relevant. And then I would love to hear how that kind of evolved into the work that you do now.
I remember being in class, and like two girls that one I ended up dating for a while, and one I ended up hooking up with for a while. Two girls like under my desk, like reaching under and like jerking me off in class. And I
Oh,
remember like
wow. How old were you? Like in high school?
it was like, yeah, like a sophomore, freshman, sophomore. And
Wow.
then I remember later, one of those people and I used to like hook up in class. Like, we'd be in the back of the chemistry lab and I'd be like getting a blowjob, or we'd be like in like the stairwell, just like fucking in between periods.
Were teachers just like not paying attention, or how did, or did people just not, like, how on earth was that
Listen,
possible?
somehow I didn't go to jail. So then, like when it comes to like my virginity, for example, I'd been dating this girl. I was really into her, really, really into her. And I thought, I was like, I'm gonna lose my virginity to this girl. And I was like all like jazzed about it. And then she kind of like ghosted me out of nowhere. And then I was like, but I didn't have the dating experience yet. Only had like a couple girlfriends prior to that. One of my friends one day, I remember it was my 16 and a half birthday, he had said to me, he was like, when are you going to be done with like this whole thing? Like, it's, you've been like trying to figure out what's going on for like 3, 4 weeks or a month or whatever it was. And like, you're not getting any communication. What is going on? When are you going to be done with this? And I was like, you know what? I'm done with it today. And that night, somebody had came over to his house, and I lost my virginity in a group sex situation with her and two of my buddies. I remember looking at the clock at my 16 and a half like birthday and like being like, this is the perfect moment, like to the minute. And I was like, that's when I like entered. And I remember being all proud of myself. I was like, I lasted 11 minutes. That's a good, that's a good showing here.
Okay, so your first experience was in a group sex situation, and it sounds like you still have a lot of group sex. Is that your favorite type of sex? Or, I mean, I know everything is great for its own reasons, but it sounds like it's still a robust part of your regular experience.
I'd say it's a robust part of my regular experience, but it's certainly not my favorite. But I'm certainly a lot more picky about what kinds of group situations I find to be fulfilling and
Yeah.
satisfying for me.
Yeah, what makes it satisfying for you?
So the state I love to get to is a place where I lose, where I end and someone else begins. And that is a wonderful place for me to get to. It's a wonderful place for me to go to with other people. But how do I know that they're there? Eye contact is one. I'd say even more important to me is breath. I always, with partners, try to and prefer to stay in sync breath-wise. And if I break out of that, to stay within a rhythm that still comes back together, depending on what is going on in a situation. So like, if someone's breathing fast because they're having an orgasm, I'll probably be at double time of their breath but I want to continue to sync up and move at the same cadence and feel connected that way. And another way is the amount of physical contact. And, you know, if it's the way birds mate, a brief meeting of the genitals, as David Attenborough would put it, that says one thing, but I want to touch, I want to feel skin on skin. And I think all the skin is important, and any part of the body could be erogenous to me.
Oh,
and
yes.
So for me, that connection through physical touch and wanting to, like, to get to the place where you lose where you end and somebody else begins, you have to touch each other, right? Like, you can't do that from across the room. You have to, you want to be,
I don't know, there's
like,
some people that have touchless gasms, but I'm like, for me, I just want to mush my body all over and feel
me
all
too.
The skin
I'm,
and all the parts and have more time.
For example, if I had to take one position, you know, to my deserted island for the rest of my life, it would be missionary. Like,
yeah, but don't make
people,
us pick.
Yeah, we don't have to pick. So we don't have to pick. But the point being that the amount of skin contact is, you know, is something that you could tell if somebody wants to engage in more skin contact or if they're moving away from more skin contact.
I can tell that, but I can't always tell if it's because they want to connect, but they're too afraid, or they're having a visceral yuck response, and that's when I have to use words to check in. Otherwise, I end up chasing them around.
Well, words are good. Words
for some people, they're good.
Words, yeah. But well, it's good to communicate regardless.
Yeah, and finding the type of communication with each partner, which I imagine you're a ninja at because of your training. So, can you fill in the gaps for us between you had this first experience? When did you realize, I mean, it sounds like maybe you always felt connection was important, but what have you learned about it since, you know, like fill in the gaps for us that feel important to you. And I really want to know how you came to explore surrogacy work.
I, from there, you know, I'd continued to just be a sexually explorative person. And as somebody with very little shame, I am very, very lucky that I have figured out how to ask for what I want in a straightforward and direct manner from people without them feeling skeeved out by it, which many cis men ask for what they want in this creepiest, cringiest way possible. And I've been fortunate that because I've learned how to communicate in certain ways, I've been fortunate that I can ask and say, hey, I would like this experience. Would you like that experience? And present it in a way that makes somebody aware that yes and no are equally two thumbs up.
Yeah.
And I basically go about my life in a way where it's like, I'm going to have a great time and either you could join me and we could have a great time, or I'm just going to continue to have a great time.
Yeah.
And it's all good for me. So if you say no, that's not where I'm at right now, great. You know, I support that. Like, thank you for telling me.
Yeah. It's like, I bring my own fun with me. Do you want to have some? No, that's cool. Okay.
Yeah, which, yeah, cool. Okay.
Also, for the record, I've exploded a lot of people with my overly direct questions. So I do wonder if sometimes there's simply like a confrontation in direct clarity that maybe ruffles some
there,
people.
It also might be gendered. The assertive man is given a promotion and the assertive woman is, you know, said to be the office bitch, right? Like, that is the reality. Like, the same action performed by somebody with a different gender presentation is interpreted differently. But I continued to explore through college and in a way that was not built upon very much jealousy or sense of ownership. And so as a result, you know, I had a lot of fun explorations, whether it was like in a one-on-one setting or in group settings, people who weren't necessarily someone I was dating and I were able to have a fulfilling and great sexual interaction without it having other implications that so much of, you know, so much of society likes to say, like, oh, you hooked up. Did they call you the next day? Like, what happened? You know, like, I was talking to someone on Monday who is looking for a surrogate partner therapist. And they're like, yeah, I've always gone about thinking like every time before I hook up with someone, like, oh, is this person the one? And then inevitably like disappointed. And I was like, yeah, it sounds like a lot of pressure to put on the first time you're hooking up with somebody, or on that person, or on yourself. Even though I don't believe in the notion of the one either.
I believe in lots of ones.
Yeah, I believe in lots of ones, because the people that you love should be unique and irreplaceable. So they are still one and singular.
Everyone is. That's why fucking different people is so fun, because everyone is so different. They feel so, I mean, do you experience that? I feel different energetic signatures.
Absolutely.
I can explore different stuff with different bodies.
Different energies. It's a different dance.
Yeah.
Different ways bodies fit together, different psychologies, different like prominent emotions.
Different flavors of fun and play.
Yeah. Different flavors of fun and play, different proclivities towards like different kinds of emotions, you know, like it could be extraordinarily, extraordinarily satisfying lovemaking to make love to someone while they like cry and like really like release grief that they're carrying and pain that they're carrying. And I'm also totally prone to like somewhere in the middle of like my smooth, sexy, like very like romantic little playlist, throwing in some like really bad old country from the 90s and singing all the words and just like burst out laughing. That's a core part of how I work. Learning bad country is part of my, what I consider part of my job. Because
how did
you,
that evolve?
You won't believe how much you can get someone out of their head and into their body when they're laughing their face off, because you just went from playing some soft and lovely rye. I love rye. To like hitting them with like some Eric Church.
That's
or
so
some like
funny.
Lone Star or something like that. And you're like singing like old country, and they're like, or like not old country, but like crappy country of yesteryear.
Like just a fully different tone. Wait, I want to share one thing with you, because I have stumbled into that dynamic, right? Of like, here's the vibe, and then the song that comes on is like, what? So pre all the sexy stuff I was doing, my main job was photography. Now I do a lot of like erotic photography, content creation, and all of this. So I would use this 60s playlist to shoot to, and it's just my favorite go-to like background chill music. I love 60s music. I love all the things. And
oh, yeah.
I started using it also for like fuck sessions, you know, like if I'm with a partner and like they don't have a preference, but they want music, I'll put on this 60s playlist. And sometime in the last year or two, they added Monster Mash and the like Doe a Deer, a Female Deer song from Sound of Music. And so there was a moment where I was like fucking a partner and I was on top and the Monster Mash came on. And so I just started like doing the rhythm to it and we just like died laughing. But
mash.
It was also really hot. Yeah. We drink a monster. So it was very silly.
The entire month of October leading up to Halloween, that song's on repeat in my house.
So you do.
Yeah. Boris mash. And me are tight. Okay.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
But yeah. So just to finish off that story is, you know, continue to explore. Started really like curating experiences where me and my ex of I was with for like 9 years, we were non-monogamous the whole time. And so we would like have some group explorations, but also I'd like curate different like experiences for friends with myself, without myself as part of it, and with myself as part of it, especially things that like lend themselves towards intimacy and towards connection. Like, oh, if you've ever, for example, made love to somebody that you've never seen or spoken to, and you like make the rule that it's like no talking. And so all of a sudden you're taking out your main like higher order sensory items, your eyes and language, and you just have touch and smell, you know, and these extremely primal forms of communication. And I would like, or, you know, I'd create experiences. And then I like started hosting small play parties and other explorations. And from there, people that I was hooking up with, you know, they would oftentimes call me years later and they'd say, hey, like, I need you to like talk to my partner. Like, I'm really struggling because I'm into this and they like can't wrap their head around it. Or like, hey, can you help me with that? And eventually, my previous life was working in the hedge fund industry. And I was working at a fund in New York. I was hooking up with somebody who's a sex therapist. And she was like, I wish you could work with my patients. I wish you would work with my patients. And I was like, oh, well, I can't do that. I'm not going to put myself in a situation with other people's trauma when I'm not qualified and equipped to do that. I'm not going to perpetuate harm. Yeah. And she was like, yeah, I understand, but like, I really wish you would. And I also like really what was going on too is I had gone to MIT and gotten a master's in analytical finance. I was like dead set down this path.
Yeah.
And I like thought I had to do that. Like I had expectations, familial expectations, expectations of myself, peers that like, you know, I would, you know, compare myself to, obviously unfairly and to my own happiness's detriment, but I had these notions and I was like, I got to have this career, you know? So I didn't do much about it, but it turns out like fast forward, you know, however many years and I'm continuing to be a resource. I'm continuing to set up experiences. I'm continuing to be a regular host of events. I'm continuing to be involved in non-monogamous and sex positive communities. I'm continuing to explore myself and I'm continuing to build knowledge. And before I know it, I'm hosting workshops. I am creating different larger scale events. And my partner and I, we run a large Burning Man camp and would host an event around, I mean, we've hosted around the country and there'd be over 1,000 people in attendance. So before I knew it, all of a sudden I'm talking to large groups of people and, you know, educating. And, you know, and it was funny because I was like, a workshop I'll sometimes teach is basically principles of female pleasure. And it's so funny because I started out with the disclaimer of, so I'm about to mansplain, FYI, you're all here. So you kind of, you signed up for it. But I'm going to mansplain and I apologize in advance. If I could do something about it, I would.
Nobody ever mansplains me because I'm too busy interrupting them with questions. I'm like, that'll tell me. You're your own expert.
And so somebody who I'm friends with, who's a sex therapist, you know, after years and years of finding myself doing, you know, in this position, despite telling myself I have to have this career, I'd like find myself here. And I'm like, this is like who I am. I can't like hide from it. It's been a decade of me hiding. And so this sex therapist friend of mine introduced me to my mentor, Dr. Susan Kay, who is an original Masters and Johnson researcher from the St. Louis lab. She's, you know, been doing this since, I don't know, the 70s. And she personally trained me. And that was just the beginning of a whole new adventure. So fast forward, you know, a couple of years of that, and I've got a, you know, full-time assistant that helps me with my work. I'm trying to decide when too many clients is too many. We're out here pushing and trying to create not just knowledge for clients, but also knowledge for other people that this work exists. And especially because I know a large number of sex workers who find the connective aspects of their work to be the most meaningful and substantive, you know, educating more people that this is a line of work they can consider if they're willing to do the training and to do it properly and to do it at least in the ways that we do, which is within the triadic model. And we're a very small community, the surrogate partner therapy community. Depending on who you ask, I've spoke to two heads of the three major professional organizations in our space, and their estimates are like 80 to 150 surrogates in the country.
Really?
Yeah. And I think the number is probably closer to 200. And when I asked them how many male surrogates do you think there are that follow the triadic model, tried and true, like their numbers are like, I don't know, 15 to 25 male surrogates in the country. There are hundreds of millions of people in this country that need this work. And there are barely hundreds. If there are hundreds, it might be 150. Of us surrogates out here doing the work.
Yeah.
You know, we're all out here trying to promote the work and trying to make sure that people know that this resource exists, because the reality of it is you can talk and 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 talk all you want in therapy with your sex therapist, But sometimes it just is that. And everyone, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to having a therapeutic relationship where they just like end up in a cycle of talking, but not actually like growing, changing, or doing anything about it. And of course, and that's especially hard when, you know, the therapist isn't there to be like, hey, you had this thought. Now, what behavior are you going to choose? You know,
if you're doing
CBT. And this therapist certainly is not sitting there. Your sex therapist isn't sitting there, you know, on an armchair next to your bed being like, hey, it looks like you're thinking about a lot of things. Or, hey, you're sucking your stomach in and it looks like you're trying to have an orgasm. Maybe you should stop trying to suck your stomach in so it might be a little bit easier to have an orgasm.
You can breathe. Yeah.
Like, right? But what we do is we create experiential opportunities for growth. And so in the moment of being there, we can help really create rapid, meaningful change that takes people otherwise, you know, much longer and much more, you know, headbanging to try to bring into their world.
I mean, it's just completely different to have an actual experience with someone. And I've had partners in my personal life tell me some stuff that I'm like, okay, well, then maybe you should be me. I don't know. They're just like, you healed me. You made me this. You made me that. And then they disappear. You know, and so that's where I'm like, oh, God. You know, it's, I love that you also had a partner that was like,
we share those experiences.
What are the most gratifying parts for you of this work?
Everything. Yeah. Everything. It's so cool. It's the most dynamic work you could possibly dream up. It's so diverse. It's so creative. You know, and I say experiential opportunities. That doesn't mean just in intercourse or just in touch exercises. It couldn't be, hey, I've got a trans woman who is still working to figure out their style and learn how to do their makeup in a way that feels like them. And I'm going to get a makeup artist and I'm going to get a stylist and maybe we're going to have a boudoir photographer.
I was going to say, that's like what I do with photo shoots.
Yeah, absolutely. But to me, boudoir photographers are like one of my great allies in the work. And they are like right, like as at the top of the list of people that I'm always looking to connect with because I'm like, you help people heal and love their body more in a very material and direct way. And you leave them with a permanent reminder of that too, which is really cool too.
I like showing them how beautiful I see them. Like when I look at people and I'm like, nope, you're beautiful. And then they're like, no, I'm not. And then I'm like, look, and they're like, irrefutable. True.
Yeah. And I try to do the same with my interaction with them physically, but it's not a permanent picture that they can print out and put on their wall. Some of the most gratifying moments are when you see somebody who didn't think that they would ever have fun or enjoy something, like accidentally have fun or accidentally enjoy or accidentally not like experience the same problem that they had. And the other, you know, super gratifying thing is when you see the light bulb go off and they're like, oh, I didn't think of that. And things change like that.
In your introduction, you mentioned being straight-ish and that you also, it sounds like maybe work with sex workers, but maybe not just sex workers. Like, do you have a specialty in this work?
So I work with women, whether they are AFAB or whether they're trans women. They are the people who I believe that I have an understanding of in a way that I can help them. I have some male clients that come to me for education around how to be a better lover. They've been heterosexual to date. And in those situations, I find a sex worker that they could work with and I help demonstrate techniques and then they can try and then we can go back and forth. And I help them hone their abilities to be a better lover. But typically my clientele is women. And within that umbrella, I do have a special interest in working with sex workers because I believe that they have less resources, they likely have more trauma, they inform the next generation of young people about sexuality, they teach them, whether directly or not. I think every sex worker is a therapist, and so that's important too. But I work with people of all consentable ages, of all different types of situations. And the vast majority of my clientele are not sex workers. I've got clientele that are across the board as far as what their needs are, what they're looking to, the directions they're looking to grow, you know, what their work is. And so I'm in no way limited to just working with sex workers, but it is an area that I think over time I want to continue to specialize in and sort of like really work with.
Yeah. When it comes to sex, and this can be professionally, personally, you can answer however you want. What do you think you are the best at? And how did you get to be so good?
I would love to make love to myself. Love. I would love to.
Wait, do you not make love to yourself? Or do you mean like if a clone?
If I could clone myself.
I see. I too have this fantasy.
You know when you see those couples and you're like, you guys look way too similar. Especially like, I know so many gay couples like this where I'm like, you're a narcissist. You're just a narcissist. That's actually what's going on here.
It could be healthy narcissism. Maybe they're just like, gosh, I really appreciate that about you. And it really is grounded in goodness.
Yeah, it totally could be. What do I like about the way that I experience intimacy? First thing is I love to play. I love to be silly. I bring humor into the room. And at the same time, I'm very connection focused and I can be very intense. So, you know, I, like we were saying earlier about singing bad country music, I'm going to do that while our eyes are locked. Uh-huh. We are going to be in tune. And then I'm going to be like, I wear my greasy ball cap, you know, like I'm going to pull that out. And so I like to have a lot of fun. I'm open to crying, to laughter, to sadness, to joy, to all of it being part of the experience. Another thing I love about the way that I experience intimacy is that I do what I like to call the sake bomb of life. And I like to have really, really juxtapose soft touch and firm touch and slow and fast and deliberate and frantic, and really do so in a way that lets each of those changes provide a deeply refreshing, stimulating, and arousing aspect to the time together, such that it's still very connective, but I am very much like, you know, I want it all. That is another aspect to what I think I'm the best at. And last is just building intimacy. You could throw me in bed with a complete stranger who I've never talked to, never seen, blindfolded with earplugs in, and by the end of it, it will be lovemaking. And so that skill is one that is really important because, at least for me, it's what brings satisfaction and this real sense of human connection out of it.
I would love to hear your personal definition of lovemaking. And like, do you contrast that with fucking? And then maybe the layer of like, have you had issues with clients and boundaries? Or how do you kind of set it up ahead of time to make sure that you have a clear container of boundaries so you can play fully and make that love? Or is that only in personal relationships?
Intimacy, like slow and thoughtful and considerate intimacy, is absolutely a thing in any interaction, I'd say, you know, in which that would be welcome. But you know, there's sex and there's intimacy, and those have different techniques. For example, right now I have a client who, they're a 40-year-old virgin, quite literally. They just have been really career focused, and then it got put off and put off and put off. And working right now, actually, on creating, you know, a good curriculum where they learn sexual technique and they learn intimacy. And those are two separate things because they're like, you know, I don't want to just like have sex. I could obviously just do that, but I want to be good and I want to know how to build intimacy. And so, you know, there are skill building activities that we're going to be doing around sexual technique, around how to build intimacy, but also around communication, around some of those basic things. Well, I mean, there's communication around sex and there's communication around intimacy. So they both have that as a part of them. But those are two like almost separate curricula that like we'll be blending together, but that they are really focused on having you know, the ability to connect and have physical intimacy. So, you know, I would say that I don't like have a great definition for what's fucking, what's lovemaking, but
no, it's just your personal definition. It's great.
Yeah, it's just my personal. Yeah.
And we're updating our definitions all the time, right? You know, I think I recently had a potential lover be like, hey, I discovered that sex and intimacy are different today. And I was like, cool. Also, for me, they are always intertwined. And also, I think because of all of the weird censorship on social media, now those two terms are conflated so often.
Absolutely.
Or like used interchangeably. And for me personally, yes. It's confusing. So that's why I'm always like, what's your personal definition, though? So there's only a few handfuls of you, and I say penis-owning surrogate workers in the United States. And yet, every time I am talking to my dude friends about any type of full-service sex work, I hear, oh man, I wish I could do that. I wish that I could. And I'm like, well, there's nothing stopping you from getting trained. But I wonder if maybe my friends who I am talking to have a different idea about what the work actually is. So could you speak a little bit to, like, if someone out there is listening and is like, oh, ooh, a professional slut, like, help us understand specifically what a surrogate is and, like, how people might find you in the world or find one of you in their local area that's trusted, that's true, you know, in those safe ways.
So the difference when you're like, ooh, a professional slut.
And I love professional sluts, just to say that. I do love them.
I too love professional sluts. So the thing that your guy friends are probably imagining, oh, having a bunch of sex that is super pleasurable for them. And really what the work entails is very little of that.
Okay. So my friend who was like, I want to be a dial-a-dick. That's not really happening.
I mean, he could be a dial-a-dick. He just couldn't be a surrogate.
Got it. Okay.
And I support dial a dick. I've been called edible arrangements cock plenty of times, except you send me to like people that you like, not to like people that you don't like that you need to send a gift to.
Wait, is that what edible arrangements really are? Is that the social norm behind it? Or is that a joke? That's a joke.
Yeah.
That's
there's a like joke? A slight amount of shade to some edible arrangements.
Really? I used to love the pineapples covered with chocolate. So you're not you're not a dial a dick in that way.
No, not in any way. Like, it is exceedingly rare that that's what a client really needs. The kind of clients that we see as surrogate partners is incredibly diverse. What their needs are incredibly diverse. And the kinds of work that we end up doing with them as a result of that, it's very creative, but it's very diverse. And so the first thing that separates, you know, your male friend's fantasy of what a job like this might look like from the reality is, the first thing is we work within the triadic model. So I only work with a licensed sex therapist as part of the team, as part of the therapeutic team. And the reason why that's so important is that, first off, if I were to do something, which there are, you could write libraries with the number of stories you hear about people who are supposed to be sexual healers or something like that, or spiritual gurus, and who take advantage of the power imbalance and sexually abuse other people. The way that we work with a licensed sex therapist as part of the care team, there is a mandatory reporter here. If I were to pull some funny business, you know, the police would get called. So that's one thing. The second thing is that the work that we do, what connects it all is that almost every client has shame as part of what they need to destroy and work through. But the ways that they need to do that vary extremely. For some people, you know, sometimes you might have a client who is a trans woman who's trying to figure out as they transition what their look wants to be or their makeup. And, you know, we'll find a stylist and we'll find a makeup artist. We'll find a boudoir photographer, like I said earlier. But, you know, I've got clients who are quadriplegic and wheelchair bound. And, you know, we're working on touch things and we're working on personal things. I've got clients who, you know, they're out of a divorce. They've been married for 20 years and they're about to re-enter the dating pool. But, in 20 years. They're not the same person that they were when they were in their 20s or 30s. And now they're looking at their body and their body's changed. And they're now going out into the dating world. And they're like, oh, but now I've got lockjaw and I've got this problem and that problem. And all they're seeing is problems. Mm-hmm. We've got clients who, I mean, body image issues are, you know, pretty much all over the place, of course. And oftentimes, you know, what, like one of the most common exercises we do is, you know, we'll sit in front of a mirror and we'll go down and have the client spend 30 minutes detailing their thought on every part of their body as they slowly go down and look and kind of give their stream of consciousness of it. And usually what people will find is that they like a lot more of their body than they thought. It's just that they only focused on the quote unquote problems. And so they are always looking at how they don't like XYZ part of their body. But for every XYZ part, there's like 10 other things that they do like. They just don't even think about it and have no gratitude for it as a result. And so your male friend who's like, oh yeah, this sounds like a job I would love to have.
It wasn't just one. I've heard it from multiples. Unconnected.
I've got friends who they're like, yeah, my guy friends want to be like you. And I'm like, okay, well, I mean, they can.
Go do the training.
And the work certainly is not about your pleasure, even if you do end up in a situation where intimate touch is needed. It's about the work. And bringing your shadow motives into the scenario is totally counter to the work.
I have a hard time understanding that because for me, work is so pleasureful. And in any partnered connection, what I know is my pleasure is a big part of their pleasure. Like I have been in so many situations where people are like, I need you to be having a good time for me to build confidence, you know? And those are just tangly words to me.
I'm with you there. It's not that you don't experience pleasure or can't experience pleasure, but
it's in service.
Exactly. But the idea that you're in the scenario and you're in the situation for your pleasure is still counter to the real reason you're in the situation you're in. You're in the situation
you're
in.
Does that mean you have to squash pleasure as it comes up? Or does it mean
no,
it's just
not? No, it does
not.
It does not. But it does mean that like you're prioritizing the work.
Yeah. Well, I think in my life that always goes without saying. I am a service submissive at heart and everything I do prioritizes the work. And I have now learned that all of my pre-sexy work, you know, where I was a photographer, when I'm a director, when I'm a producer, like that's all just holding space as a top. And so I've now learned to use my sexual submissiveness always in service. And so I'm mincing words here, but it's because I want to make sure I understand what you're saying. And I, you know, I think pleasure is healing for all of us.
Well, first off, you're a beautiful soul. And I love that you recognize that about yourself and can use that knowledge, you know, in the ways that you do work with people nowadays. Yeah, but like, you know, I encourage your guy friends to go out there. And if they really, really care about doing work like this, to go get trained and learn. But the work is not about their pleasure. The work is about the work.
I told them to start off by trying volunteer work where they're just holding space for their lovers. And if they like that, then maybe consider a professional career.
I encourage your guy friends out there to go pursue that. And what I could tell you that Dr. K, my mentor, would ask them, the first question she'll ask them probably is very simply, and I know that she'd be two thumbs up about me saying this and sharing this, is she'll say, well, do you have that thing I can't teach you? That is the first thing she's going to say. And what she's really trying to talk about is when you're in intimate situations, when you're in situations where you're giving care through touch, are you able to be very slow and intentional and fully present in your touch? Mm. The quality of touch is fully 100% a function of how present you are in that touch.
With your other person.
With the other person or with yourself. And, you know, I had a client who, when I said, oh, of course, you know, there's an art to touching. And they're like, what do you mean? And I was like, well, there's an art to touching. And I was like, okay. And I like kind of ran my fingers on their back. I was like, okay, this is one way of touching. And I was like, here's another way of going the exact same route. And one was just slower, a lot more present, a lot more like intentional and deliberate. And she was like, oh. And then I like said, okay, now run your fingers on my back. And the way she touched changed instantly.
It's so funny because when I talk to neurotypicals, they can't always put it into words. Like I give my sister tickles. This is not a sexual thing, but our whole life long, like these light touches up and down arms called tickles. And I'll do it with my nails or my fingertips. And I am known for delivering this. I love to touch people. And so my sister, when we're around, we'll be like out somewhere. She'll just put her arm out and I know what it means. You know, and a few weeks ago, she was like, "Why are you so good at this?" And I was like, "It feels good to me too. That's what I'm feeling for. Like I'm feeling for this like moment." And I'm not a person like anytime someone is like, "Oh, you're so intuitive. You're an empath." I'm like, "No, I'm not. I'm a pattern machine and everything for me is so practical, but it looks like art, right? I look like the most whimsical creature, but I'm actually extremely practical and I just want that to be recognized for people."
My male sex education client who is autistic is like, "Can somebody actually learn this who's autistic?" And I point to a friend of mine who's a content creator and full service provider who's very autistic and is like, "I had to learn and I recognize the patterns and now know when to stop and say the things that neurotypical people need to hear."
Yeah.
So I do have a question for you then.
Yeah.
Speaking of your tickles, do you ever keep different textures on your fingers so that you're able to deliver different kinds of touch? Like, for example, sometimes if I have like a rough nail that like maybe like when I cut it, I like didn't cut all the way and I just ripped it off. And so then I'll have like a little rough edge and I'll be like, you know what? I'll keep that. Or I'll like have like a little area where I had like some dry skin and I'll just keep it so I can give just a different kind of touch. So when I'm touching someone, it's like, oh, here, this is more scratchy and this is more smooth and like, oh, here's a little bit of a little edge, you know, and like I can deliver a wide variety of touch through my fingers.
Yes. And what you can't see is that almost all the time, and I didn't learn this is probably stimming, but like this is almost always what I'm doing. I'm almost always, and like I had like a whatever. I haven't actually talked that much out loud explicitly about being autistic. I've just kind of like referred to it, self-diagnosed, but like I've been feeling my cuticles my whole life.
I literally, while you were saying that, I was doing this already.
I've been doing it the whole time. Yeah. And so that exact thing, you know, and when I was little, I would like pick at hangnails. I'd pick my lips. And my brother was like, "Stop, don't do that. That's bloody. That's gross." You know, and I adjusted. But now I pick them just lightly enough. Again, it's important to me to not have open wounds on my cuticles because I do like to finger some bitches and like put my fingers up buttholes, sometimes without gloves, depending on where I am. You know, and so I do make an effort to keep cuticles nice. But yes, sensation play of all kinds. Also, I went to this expo in January and Sports Sheets showed me they have these gloves that are very soft and then they have little spiky things in them. And so that's more for other person's sensation. I mean, I still get so much joy out of like giving sensations anyway. Yeah. But like if for me, skin on skin is the best. Like when someone's like, "Well, you know, what toy do
you
want to use?"
You mean flat skin on skin.
Any skin on skin. like if I have the choice between a tool or an implement and a toy, if someone's doing it on me, I will want hands. I want hands. But if someone wants to use implements on me, I love all the sensations. But like, that's why I don't want to be in charge. Because I'm like, I want everything. I just don't have to pick it.
When you were saying earlier about, you know, what are you good at? And I say like, primal, like I am much more organic and primal variant. I don't identify as kinky, actually, even if most people would probably say that, just because there's so many different things that people think when you say that. And I'm like, the leather side of the kink world is like not what I'm talking about. I'm like, if someone's going to be restrained, I want to use my hands. I want to use my weight. I want to like use my weight and like, you know, like really. And I grew up playing hockey and wrestling. So especially from wrestling, like I want to use my weight. I want to use my body. If I'm going to like really try to like convey like dominance, I want to do it by like having you so that you know that you can't escape, like you can't and like have your jaw and like, you know, give you like give you that like press that says I got you.
It's pretty animalistic. I love that. I like, played water polo in high school, so I'm like, let me wrap my legs around people, you know.
And I'm like, and like when I come I growl, you know. Like I want to be an animal.
So do you even growl when you are with clients or is that not, it's a different scenario? Depends. Okay.
It depends. It depends. I mean, I know really well how to turn off and turn on different parts of my sexuality depending on the situation. So, for example, in my personal life, I think squirting is super hot. I think it is really beautiful. It really, to me, like, represents a lot of that rebellion I was talking about, because for, you know, at least in Western scientific thought, like, women didn't experience pleasure literally as a concept until like 100 years ago. So I think that female ejaculation beautifully, like, steals that back from the patriarchy and re-owns the concept of female pleasure. And so, along with the fact that obviously G-spots are tied to emotional orgasms, and I, especially for people with trauma stored in their, which is usually stored in your pelvic muscles, it's all oftentimes such an important emotional release that can be associated. As a result, I have to draw the lines in my mind, and, you know, speaking to your guy friends who would want to do work like this, draw the lines in my mind where, for example, when I'm hosting a squirting workshop and I've got literally, you know, over 1,000 people watching, and I have hundreds of people cheering, and, you know, there's somebody learning for the first time in front of all of those people with their legs spread, you know, I wear either two pairs of underwear or I wear really tight pants and like jeans. And I turn off that part of my brain that, like, in my normal life would be like, this is hot. Like, squirting is hot. And I am fully just there to do what I need to do to teach people and keep them enthusiastic and help people feel safe. And so being able to turn off and on different parts of your sexuality is an important part of the work as well.
Okay. I'm not sure I follow that train of thought, because in my mind, I mean, I know it's normal in our current country, the way things are where I live, at least, that, like, sex and work are separate. I'm hearing that maybe someone seeing an erection would make them feel unsafe or uncomfortable. But don't you think the perfectest world would be where we can actually, like, be our full human selves and just have good enough boundaries that, like, it's actually okay if there is an erection or something? Like,
I hear your point, and it's
a
an
noodle.
Interesting point.
It's a fresh noodle.
It is a fresh noodle. But I have, every single time I have hosted that event with my partner, I hold up a big hammer.
Okay.
Big hammer, like a sledge. And I am like, obviously, if you pull out a phone, even if you're checking the weather, I'm destroying it. But also, if you are caught touching yourself, and I probably stationed 30 plus people.
Yeah. Well, that's a boundary. That's a clear boundary.
If you're caught doing that, then you're going to be, I'm going to end the event, and I'm going to literally escort you out of there, shaming you the whole way. Like, that's what I threaten people with. And then when I explain it, what I point out is, you are making this event about you and your pleasure and your being turned on. It is not about you and your being turned on. It's about the people who are coming up here and being brave and owning their body in such a brash, incredibly over the top, just absolutely courageous way. And so when people, you know, turn it into something focused on their pleasure and their sexual sensibilities, then they take from the person who's come up there and is doing the vulnerable thing.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But that's different from just, like, playing with a hard-on is different. And I don't have a penis, right? So I don't know. I'm not an expert here, and this is why we have to talk to each other. But I'm just, like, in my perfect utopian estate, because that's all I could probably control, I think, well, I also hear from a lot of nudists that it's like the hard-ons end up not happening because everything gets so normalized, which is, I'm sure, very different from a workshop that's focused on sexual skill building or whatever specific topic it is. It also surprises me every time to learn that the people who go up there to demonstrate are shy, because I'm like, I would do it. I am not that kind of shy, but I know that I have a really different experience in this world.
I mean, we have people come up who are not that shy. We have people come up who are, and they have something to work through. Hey, I was sexually assaulted and somebody tried to take ownership of my body in that way. And I am doing this absolutely brash thing, this absolutely, I mean, absurd, like, truly, from a standpoint of, if you asked 1,000 men who would stand up and try to do something that they, like, have never done before in front of a crowd of hundreds of people cheering, whether or not they would try that, you know, even if I ask them, would you try to do a handstand? You've never done a handstand? Try to do a handstand with all these people watching and cheering. The vast majority of them would be like, nah, I'm good. Don't worry about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's hard enough to get people to share any fantasy ideas, even just a regular brainstorm, non-sexual, because we live in such a judgment culture. But that's why I'm like, we have the opportunity to change it.
So when people come up and they, you know, come up to our event, they're like, oh, you know, I was assaulted and I want to claim my body back. And guess what? The number one way to claim your body back is to show that you own that body. And so it's like, kind of like, hey, if I got out of jail, one of the first things that I might consider doing is skydiving because I can do that because it's my fucking body and I'm free now, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a sexy event. It's like watching people give birth. It's a very healing event. Everyone who watches it cries together. The one time I actually stepped out from hosting it and I was like, well, you guys got this for like one person. And I like sat down and I like just watched from the audience for the first time ever. I instantly just started crying. I was like, I didn't know why, but I'm crying and I'm looking left and right. And like I'd hosted the event, you know, however many dozen times. So I knew everyone's crying, but I'm like looking around. I'm like, oh shit, I'm like crying and I don't know why. And everyone else is crying too, you know?
Well, I would love to hear from you on that note. What do you think we collectively, the world, need to make our societies sexier, more loving places?
I think that we need to embrace difference. There are people who feel a lot of fear when they see things that are different than themselves. And, you know, you see that in a million different ways, not just sexually, you know, obviously, you know, you see people who live with a lot of fear, and that fear is because they fear things that are different than them. And if we can find a world that is more empathetic, then we can empower more people to say, I'm stepping into my sexy. So what? I'm not a magazine. I'm not like what you expect on the cover of a magazine.
Also, so what if they are? Just as a person who grew up with people being like, stupid blonde-haired, blue-eyed people who are skinny. And I'm like, oh, you're right. I'm terrible. I'm going to go die now. And that's the thing that I've had to spend the last, like, So it's like, no matter what we look like, I think we all deserve to feel sexy. And I love, like, I love spreading the message that, like, differences are hot and all can be appreciated.
Yeah, and differences are hot. And, you know, in fact, my human sexuality professor used to always say the only true aphrodisiac is variety. And so I think if we could live in a world, I recently heard somebody say that they would describe their politics as empathetic. They're into empathetic politics. If we could have a more empathetic perspective to difference instead of fear-based reactions, that we could have a world where more people feel comfortable stepping into their sexy. Because what makes somebody sexy and what makes somebody feel turned on has a lot to do with whether or not they just feel sexy about themselves, not about other people. And when we live in a world where people's differences are embraced more, then more people could step into their sexy. More people can receive their joy from other people's joy. More people can experience compersion. And we can live in a world where people are excited about other people's sex. People are excited about other people's differences. People are excited to celebrate other people's joy and pleasure. You know, I know people who, when they hear about other people having really good sex, they get mad. They're like, oh, I wish I was there or something like that. And it's like
evidence that you can get there.
Yeah. And why don't you just be excited that that person had that experience?
Yeah. I have a phrase that I like to say with one of my best friends. We say, well, where there's one, there's more. So instead of being like, ah, jealous or envy or whatever you want to call it, we're just like, aha, an example that it's possible. Okay. And then, you know, focusing on myself, what I can actually control. And I think, you know, I definitely know some people who can get focused on the negative, and where your attention goes, that is what grows, right? And so, and neuroscience actually is coming out to like support all the things behind beliefs, and, you know, what we believe is actually a huge part of our physiological experience too. So I totally hear you. And you're doing that work. You're literally a reflector to people of their sexy parts, creating these safe containers. And it sounds like in so many different ways.
I have habitually immediately been able to tell where somebody has some insecurity about parts of their body. And I have, without like thinking about it consciously, although I realized consciously at some point that I was doing this, always been like naturally giving extra love to that part of their body, but not in a way that just draws attention to it, because that oftentimes makes people uncomfortable, but rather that, like, if you're going to draw attention to it, that you do so in a very specific and thoughtful way that lets someone know that you're sincere. You know, it's not just like, oh, you don't like your hips, and I'm telling you your hips are sexy. It's like, oh, I really like the way that, like, your hips interface into your leg, and you have this, like, kind of very beautiful crease that, like, brings my eyes to here, or I really like this, like, little thing. And I oftentimes say to people who are looking for advice about how to be a better lover is that if you can stop, slow down, and just try to appreciate every single bit of what makes the person that you're interfacing with, like, what makes them them, even, I mean, I'm referring to in a physical sense, but also in an emotional personality sense. But if you can stop and you can look and appreciate every dimple and every wrinkle and every curve, if you can do that and just, like, be really slow about it and just really take that in and just fully drink them up, if you can do that, you'll have done something for them that they will have never done for themselves.
Yeah, I would say we can't do it for ourselves. That's the type of witnessing that only intimate partners can offer us in those very specific ways.
I tend to agree with you, but I can see a version where I can see a version of the world where someone pushes back on that.
I mean, that's fair, and it might be a words difference issue. I just know that for myself, a personal experience is always so much different from one that's mixed with other person's energies. And so I know that no matter what, when I'm with someone else, it's a completely different experience. And I've, you know, to your point, I feel like one of the things I'm proudest of in my own growth in the past couple years is that I've learned how to kind of, like, shut up and be like, can I touch your belly? I love it. You know, because that if someone is self-conscious about that, they don't want to hear that at all, even if I'm saying a positive thing. But I've learned that I can trace down their breasts, find the belly button, give some kisses. I just show them the appreciation, and that physical experience shifts the focus from how do I look to how do I feel. And that's what I think is, like, so beautiful about the work that you're doing. That was a huge gift that I had from a lover that changed the course of my entire life. I was like, oh.
If you can get people out of their mind and into their body, for the most part, most people, when you do that, are going to have a much better experience. Yeah. It's just, and that's why fun is essential, because when you're having fun, you're not watching the clock. You're not watching yourself from above and taking a third party perspective. You're not judging yourself. You don't realize how much time is flying by because you're not watching the, you're not watching that for that.
I can get
you
lost.
You're just getting lost and fully present. And so that is why I learn shitty country songs. And that is why, because when I can get somebody just giggling and laughing and, like, in that place, when I can do that, then they lose their self-consciousness. They lose their anxieties. They lose all of these things where, you know, one day they're like, I never want to be seen naked by a man. And then the next day they're standing there naked and laughing their ass off, you know, and it's because they're not thinking about that. They're just being. And, you know, the truth of the matter, and I learned this really truly from my high school physics teacher as I watched him through the process of dying. Everything in life is easier when you're having fun doing it. Mm. Everything. And even if it's a shitty thing that really sucks, if you could find a little bit of fun in it, it will make it so much better. I tell clients all the time, I said, if you think that, like, it would be insulting to, like, be laughing and having fun while in a situation of, like, personal vulnerability and intimacy, then I might not be the provider to work with you. But if you're somebody who can recognize that sex doesn't have to just be a destination and it could be a journey, that it could have a lot of different elements to it, and that that dance can look different with different people in different ways, different situations, then I am the right provider for you. If you're somebody who can see that fun is an important aspect of it and can recognize, actually, truly, the easiest way to say it is, if you realize that sex is how adults play, I can work with you.
Fuck yeah. Chet, thank you so much for being a guest on X Stories.
Oh, thank you so much. This was such a delightful interview.
Lovers, that is our show. If you know a friend who would like this episode, please take a second to share it with them now. 52 Days of Play is underway, and there are so many fun ways to support and shape this next year of content. For example, if you would like private, behind-the-scenes audio updates that include my sex stories, fantasies, work noodles, plus virtual co-working sessions, and a place to share your wins and wishes out loud Monday through Friday during the 52 Days of Play, join me on Patreon at patreon.com/yolee. For the video versions of these private shares, along with exclusive daily live voyeur cam access where you can spy on me while I create, as well as interactive lives Monday through Friday, plus a mix of exclusive early access and behind-the-scenes photo and video shares during my 52 days of slutty creations, join me on OnlyFans at onlyfans.com/yolee. Or, to just see teases and unlock one by one, join me on my free OnlyFans page, onlyfans.com/yofree. For private messages, calls, or video, you can also find me on sexpanther.com/yo. If you're not into the sexy stuff, you might want to sponsor a segment. Let me dedicate a daily wiggle, masturbation meditation, or a solo research episode to you, your boo, or your brand. You pick the topic or noodle and co-create with me. Details are on my website, yolee.com/52. I am also super into parallel play. Tell me, what does your hot person spring into summer look like right now? I'd love to hear what play or pleasure you are noticing, practicing, or growing, or you can always answer one of my questions, ask me one of your own, or share a story via yolee.com/share. I especially love voice memos, but emails I can read on update episodes are also great. I would also love to know, what adult creator would you like to see me play with during my 52 days of play? Tell me so that I can send them an invitation by emailing xstoriespodcast@gmail.com. And I am accepting new photography clients now until the end of June. Details about how you can work with me are all on my website, yolee.com, and the link is in the description below. And sexstoriespodcast.com will always take you straight to the podcast landing page, or I guess I should say directly, because nothing I do is really straight. For those of you who don't know, X Stories is a completely independent creation. I fund the production of this podcast through my work as a content creator, photographer, and sex worker, and I appreciate each and every one of you that understands that your contribution to my work, whether it's Patreon, OnlyFans, or a creative session, photo shoot, voice memo, or written story for me to share, it is incredibly meaningful to me. My work is what lights me up in life. And my goal is to continue to create things that are also meaningful to you. So hearing from you helps me shape what I do. And when I don't hear from you, I feel like I'm just speaking into the void. So if you love this podcast and want it to continue, please let me know by leaving us up to 5 stars on Apple and Spotify. And for my birthday, I would love a thoughtful review on Apple Podcasts that lets others know why you love listening to sex stories. I'm looking forward to getting to know more of you and going deeper during those 52 days of play. Remember, if you want to work or play with me, my website, yolee.com, is where you can find details of all that I do. Thank you for listening. Thank you for spreading ripples of love. Please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Remember to hydrate, wiggle, and breathe. And may you be brave enough to share yourselves and your stories in the name of lovely human connection.